The one thing that you probably do need to work on, you know, and for a long time, is yourself. Everything else is peripheral. There's that old line about, you know, if you find a job you love, you never work a day in your life. And it's like, well, it's pretty true. Like, I've had some, you know, a few great jobs where it's like, you know, you don't think about your next day off or your weekends because you're just happy waking up and going, doing that job.
The next question I would ask is a question that many ask online and all over the place would be, if God was so good, why allow evil? First question is the question I always like to ask all the guests. Who's Martin? For those who are watching that don't know who you are, who is Martin?
Who's Martin? Well, I'm a father. I've got three children. I'm a passionate person. I'm a bit of a deep thinker as well. At very, you know, like to analyse things. Keep to myself a fair bit, but can be outgoing when the time's right. So, I enjoy art and music. And my friends and family, so.
When you talk about family, how many, you said you had children, how many children you got?
Three.
Three. They're all in Darwin?
No, I have a daughter from my first marriage. She's 23. Yeah. And I have two boys from my current marriage, who are 13 and 11.
Well, while that topic is at hand, why don't we talk about that? So first marriage, what happened there?
Well, we'd met back in 1995, I was working in the National Australia Bank at the time, and she was a customer. She owned a business, and she'd come in regularly. And I was coming towards the end of working with the National Australia Bank. I'd been there 6.5 years, and my father had passed away earlier that year, and I'd promised him that I wouldn't leave the bank until he'd had passed.
Wow.
So, that's another story altogether, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that at some point.
But, so I was close to finishing up with the bank, and I was looking at moving over to Western Australia and working in the mining industry. I had a job lined up over there. And I just got up the courage one day to ask her out, and it sort of stunned me how quickly we just hit it off. And before I knew it, before I started the mining job, she'd asked me to come work for her because her little brother had, you know, quit working for her. She had a coffee shop, so she asked me to come along and, you know, help her out, which I did. And then next thing I knew, I sort of put off going to that mining job, and then we got closer and closer. And then, yeah, next thing I knew, I kicked in the mining job and I stayed working in the coffee shop, and then we got engaged and then we got married. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so she actually proposed to me.
Oh,
so,
Nick.
Yeah. So that was something different.
And different.
Yeah. And it was, I only had one condition.
Yeah.
Is that we moved to Darwin.
Why Darwin?
I had, during high school, I had friends who'd come up here and spent a year up here.
Yeah.
And when they came back, they said, Martin, Darwin would suit you down to the ground. It's the right weather, the right sort of lifestyle and atmosphere. And so it had taken me basically 10 years after finishing school to get up here. But my first wife, Sally, she had actually worked up here as a nurse.
Yeah.
So she'd been up here. And she said, yep, definitely. So we got married, worked in the coffee shop for a bit longer, and then sold that, and then made our way up to Darwin. We took about 4 months to travel up, so we took our time cruising up in an old S-Series Valiant and just saw Australia as we did, and just took our time. So, yeah, got up here end of 97, and then sort of 98 started working up here in Darwin. And then, but in regards to the first marriage, had a year or so in Darwin, and then we got a job in a remote location over in the East Kimberleys, like the western side of Northern Territory, on a place called Lejeune Station. We were managing a Aboriginal rehab centre, so my wife and I. We did that for a couple of years, and then she fell pregnant, and her family were very, very strong about her not having the baby out bush, and they wanted her to come down back down south to New South Wales, Victoria. We're from Albury-Wodonga originally. So we finished up that job, moved back down south for a couple of years, and then there was just some issues around some undiagnosed, postnatal depression, with Sally being a nurse, she sort of denied having any issues, but, myself and other people could see that she wasn't the same person after she had my daughter Ruby. And so it was a bit hard. So, we'd bought a farm together. I was working and, financially it was tight, things like that. And then I ended up working three different jobs just to pay the bills, and Sally wasn't right in the right headspace to, I suppose, to go back to work at that time. So there were strains and stresses and frustrations and things that happened, and unfortunately, we just sort of moved apart from each other. So in 2004 we separated, and I moved back up to Western Australia, up to the top end, and I was had a job over in Derby, running an Aboriginal corporation over there. So So
you're not of Indigenous descent, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
So, that was
that first marriage.
That was that first marriage.
It sounds like a lot of adventures, man. Up down, up down.
Yeah, there was a lot of things going on. There's like it was. She's a great lady, and we're still friends, and of course. And my daughter's now 23 at university down in Melbourne. Well, she was in Geelong, but moved over to Werribee now. So she's studying. She was doing nursing like her mum, and then got into like graphic design. And the arts. She's very arty as well. So she's looking at that side of things.
I'm very curious in your perspective on life. So early on, you filled in the Discover You podcast guest worksheet, and in one of the questionnaires was about your religion, and you put in Christian.
Yes.
So how heavy are you as a Christian?
I go to church every week.
Still do?
Yeah, still go to church every week.
Beautiful.
I was actually raised Catholic. But when I was about 12, nearly 13, I was sick of going to church. I had three brothers and a sister, and me and my three brothers were all altar boys at church. So we were going to church all the time. My mum's very Catholic as well. Her father was devout Catholic from Ireland, Northern Ireland, and it was very big, being a Catholic, I suppose. But at around the age of 12 or 13, I just felt lost and not interested, and just wasn't interested in church or
was
God
it because
or anything.
Of the routine, the
I was bored when I was in church because I knew the church service inside out. I could knew when to stand, sit, kneel, stand, sit. I knew all the routines and everything. So when I went to church, it was just like going onto automatic. I wasn't getting anything
like
out of it. A little bit like that. So I'd said to my dad that, I didn't want to go to church anymore. And,
And what did they say?
Well, he'd said he understood because he converted from being a Protestant to Catholicism to marry my mum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he understood that, religion's a personal thing. So he said, well, as long as you're living under this roof, you'll have to go to church. And I didn't like that idea, so I sort of threatened to, go somewhere else.
As a 13-year-old?
Yeah, I just thought I'd run away and go somewhere else. I said, if I was forced to do something, I'm not very big on being made to do something, So I sort of, pushed back on that a little bit and So they said, all right, we'll make you a deal. If by the time you turn 15, you still feel that way, you don't have to go to church anymore. Yeah. So I said, okay. So I stuck it out, you know, going to Catholic church for, you know, a couple more years, and then turned 15 and just stopped going because I knew that was my time and they couldn't argue about it. So I stopped going to church, and my two older brothers and my little brother and sister were all like, why do we still have to go?
And they said, stopped going too?
Well, no, they didn't have that deal.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the parents were saying, you know, well, this is the arrangement that we'd made, and said, mm-hmm. if you had have felt that strongly as well, then it would have been the same case. So
they stayed in the church at that time?
Yeah,
so the time. Now you've gone back to church. Is that still in Catholic church?
No. After I sort of, at 15, and not any religion at all, my life did take a bit of a turn at school, sort of went downhill a little bit in, you know, I got expelled from one school.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yes, and, and so was on a completely different path to my siblings, I suppose, at a completely different school to what they were going to, and, just a different way of doing things.
Do you think part of that derailing and turning into whatever you turned into was because you left the church?
I wouldn't say because I'd left the church, but I was trying to find myself, I suppose, and who I was, and trying to find my own identity, and and I was sort of, I suppose, labelled as a naughty kid. Mm-hmm. You know, my siblings would, you know, think of me as being naughty as well. And I was probably was a little bit of a naughty kid.
Were you the black sheep of the family?
Yeah, I probably could describe myself as that. You know, I was the middle child as well, that sort of syndrome as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I suppose I just sort of felt I had like a little chip on my shoulder myself. And, I just was pushing against everything. I was sort of against authority a fair bit. Yeah. So I wasn't nasty, you know, or aggressive or violent or anything like that. It was just more naughty, doing naughty things.
But really, when you reflect back at it right now, you would say you were trying to find yourself.
Yeah. And then when I was about in year 11, I got expelled again.
Oh, yeah.
So for another school, and I was lucky enough to be able to come back into my first school because I still had my younger brother and younger sister there. So reluctantly they sort of took me back in, and so for a while that was sort of happening. And then I had a whole series of, unfortunately, you know, friends passing away, for various reasons, you know, suicide and car accidents and illness, and all in a short period of time. And I really felt
that was hectic.
Yeah, it was very hectic. And I was, just felt I had nobody. And, I was sort of like thinking about my own sort of life and things like that. And a really nice girl who, we weren't boyfriend or girlfriend or anything, but she'd asked me to come along to her church. And I just sort of had this feeling of like, okay, something drawn me to it. So, she took me to her church, and that's when I became a Christian again.
Yeah.
So I sort of found God again because it wasn't so much of, you know, when growing up in a Catholic church, it's sort of like you have, you know, guilt stamped on your forehead, you know, if you feel guilty about everything you do, all your sins or whatever. It's just the mantra. It's just how it's taught, I suppose, and how I interpreted it.
Yeah. Do you feel that a large portion of people interpret it that way as well? It's a guilt-driven religion.
I wouldn't want to say that, but it's like it feels like that. You know, you're made to feel guilty about if you do something wrong. Where when I went to this Christian church, this Pentecostal church, I just found it was more about a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and how I looked at that was more about not as this big awe-inspiring being, you know, that you had to be scared of and, you know, bow down to and, you know, look out, he's watching everything you do. Then it was more about a father-son relationship, which, changed my attitude towards religion then, because it wasn't so much that construct of religion. It was more about, for me, it was about a relationship with God.
Yeah. Do you feel like a large part of that was because of how you grew up as a child, the relationship with you and your father?
I've thought about that in the past, mm-hmm. if it was something, but my dad was, you know, a really good fella. Yeah. We were very, I suppose, when looking back on it, similar in a lot of ways. And we did do a lot of things together. So he was very sporty and outgoing and doing things in the community, and I was along for the ride sort of thing, helping out and, you know, doing things with him.
It's very interesting because if you were very close to your family in that sense, mm-hmm. you early on you were describing about pushing back to whatever they were throwing at you.
Yeah.
And so my assumption is why push back? My question really, why push back?
Yeah, I just felt like I don't know, it just didn't fit sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a puzzle that I was just from a different jigsaw puzzle. I felt
you
like,
didn't
you know,
fit in that family.
It didn't fit quite right. And yeah.
Is that because of the way they spoke to you, treated you, or what was it? Can you pinpoint anything?
No, I think I was just very independent as well.
Yeah.
So when they were wanting to do things together, I was wanting to do things on my own. And I wanted to explore and go out. And, you know, a lot of times when we had, like, you know, free time, school holidays, whatever, I was off.
Gone,
you know. So, like, we grew up on a farm, you know, from a very young age. And I just remember, you know, when we moved into town, that was when I was about 15 as well. And so that whole thing of going from a rural lifestyle, being on a farm, you're sort of very close and you might know your neighbours a little bit. And sort of having that freedom of space to then coming into the city and having all your friends close by. And, you know, I used to sneak out the window nearly every night.
Oh, shalug.
You know, so, you know, I'd sneak out and I'd go and catch up with my friends or girlfriends or whatever.
You don't regret any of that, do you?
Well, it's made me who I am, I suppose.
Do you have any regret of how your childhood?
A little bit, you know, there's things that I wish I hadn't have done when I was younger, of course.
Like what?
Well, I wish I hadn't ever taken up cigarettes, just for one. Yeah, you know, I wish I didn't smoke cigarettes because I was the only one in the family that did. You know, mum and dad didn't smoke, brothers and sisters didn't smoke, and it was just one of those things that was my rebellion sort of thing.
What was that when cigarette got
Well,
you?
I started smoking cigarettes when I was about 13.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So
who got you onto that?
Just me. It was just my thing.
It was just a rebellion thing.
Yeah, it was back in the days when you could walk into the corner store and sort of go, oh, I'm just buying a pack of cigarettes for my dad or mum or something.
And you could,
if you had the money, they'd give you cigarettes.
They'd give it to you.
And you didn't have much money. So, you know, the cigarettes was more of a trying to be cool, trying to fit in.
Yeah.
You know, when I'd been expelled the first time and had gone to a new school, we'd gone from a boys-only school to a co-ed school. So suddenly in year nine, there's like girls everywhere, you know, and it's like, it was all this sort of thing. So, you know, and I was a bit shy, you know, and I just wanted to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was some mates that I'd made, and part of the thing was that they were a bit of a rough crowd. So smoking was, you know, sneaking out for a cigarette was one of the things. And it's like, well, if you want to fit in.
That's how you're going
to. You know, you got
to. Well, to be wanting to fit in, you would have to have. Personally, I believe you would have to have some sort of, you have to be battling with your self-worth and self-love, because to wanting to please other people, right? I get the social aspect that you want to belong to a group, you want to belong to something. How do you balance out the I want to belong, but I also want to be myself?
Yeah, well, I was always a little bit shy, I guess, because when I was younger, I had a really bad stutter.
Oh, really?
So I couldn't even get a sentence out properly without it being, you know, taking 30 seconds to get a 5-second sentence out. You know, that's what it felt like. So talking to people, I was very shy about that. So had to, you know, I had a nice sister, you know, a nun at school, in primary school, who'd sort of taught me some exercises about speaking slower and clearer and practicing and just having that confidence to speak. And so it took me a while, it took me a few years. And
to get that self-confidence.
I think that sort of stuck with me. And, you know, I remember sort of my brothers and sisters teased me about that and a few other things. So, yeah, that might have been part of why I felt different, you know, or, obviously you used to got teased a lot, you know, so because I was a little bit darker than my siblings, so they used to call me, you know, names, and they used to tease me about being from adopted and all this other stuff, you know, big brothers.
I'm just curious, what sort of names they used to call you?
Oh, well, they used to tease me and...
Because if you're darker, what sort of names are they calling you?
Well, that, you know, they used to tease me that I was Aboriginal, you know, really? And it's sort of like, and before, you know, when we were younger, we grew up in central New South Wales with a lot of Aboriginal people around, and it was back in the, you know, early 70s, so there was still somewhat of segregation in the schools almost to a degree. So, you know, when we had a school dance, it was like Aboriginal kids over there and the white kids are over here. And but when we were doing the practices, I was put in with the Aboriginal kids to practice with.
Really?
I don't know why, but it was just like to make up the numbers maybe, or they just the teacher thought, oh,
did that,
he looks like an Aboriginal
kid. How did you feel during those times?
At that stage, I just, didn't know any different, I suppose. It was just like, you know, at first I was sort of...
You can see a difference in skin colour, surely.
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah. But it was just that, it was still a lot of discrimination, you know, in those days and things like that, and name calling. So, you know, a lot of the names, you know, you get called those sort of names and, you know, I'd, you know, arc up and push back and I'm not and, you know, get really upset about it, you know, trying to defend myself, I suppose. And that would just give more fuel to get up me more.
Did you get into a lot of fights when you were...
No. I'm quite a pacifist, actually. So really? I can't, you know, with my siblings, we, you know, had a little ruckus every now and then, but nothing really serious. Because I was really, I've always been, you know, against violence. You know, I just didn't like the idea of it. I don't know. I didn't like inflicting it or being it inflicted on me. So I thought, well, if I treat someone like that, that's how I like to be treated.
Yeah, that's a fair call.
Yeah.
Early on you said you kind of regret taking up a cigarette. Why?
Oh, just because, you know, I'd love sport and I think, you know, from smoking and things like that, it just impacted your health and your ability to play sport at the level you wanted to play at.
So you started when you were 13. Mm-hmm. You still on cigarette?
At the moment, yes. So I've sort of tried many times to give up and I've sort of been somewhat successful and then, you know, taken it back up again and, you know, just recently, you know, was vaping and stuff like that to try to get off the cigarettes and was going really well.
Do you think vaping is worse? I've got some friends that are saying vaping is actually worse than cigarette because the amount of nicotine they've got.
Yeah, for me it was like it got me off the cigarettes.
Yeah,
And I could go a long time without vaping.
Yeah.
It was just that, it was just the convenience of vaping. It was just, you know, when I had the urge, I could just have a vape and then I'd be right.
Yeah.
Where with cigarettes, it was sort of like you got to go and have a whole cigarette. You can't just have half a cigarette So when that all changed, you know, and the vapes got, you know, cut out.
Yeah.
It was like I still was just on that verge and said, like, oh, I'll just have one cigarette.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, that was just two. And then it was just three a day. And now it's sort of like try to sort of limit myself to, you know, half a dozen a day if I can try, you know.
This journey is a really tough one of trying to quit smoking. And you've tried to quit multiple times.
Yep.
Do you think you have the solution? What strategy are you using to try to quit?
Yeah, well, cold turkey seems to be, it's just mind power really and motivation to sort of give up. You know, I've tried patches and gum and, you know, the only thing I probably haven't tried is that hypnotism sort of stuff.
Hypnotism?
Yeah, I've been told, oh, I tried that hypnosis stuff to, you know, get you to...
You can get hypnotized into letting go of a cigarette.
Apparently, yeah. So it's all mind over matter sort of thing. So, So for me, it's sort of like, cigarettes, because it led on to other things then, you know, as a teenager, you know, I was, because I was tall as well as a kid, you know, by 15, I could go into a bottle shop and get something.
Alcohol.
So, yeah. 15, 16, starting to drink as well, and, you know, then you get into, you know, experiment with other things, so smoking drugs and things like that. Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, and that just made the downhill slide.
Even worse.
As I was mentioning earlier, even worse. So part of the reason I got expelled the second time, you know, was just getting in trouble and, just not really having a good attitude towards things. Yeah, there was a couple of times when I thought about, you know, finishing it up as well when I was a teenager. And then I had a friend commit suicide, and, you know, after him and myself had a chat the night before about the subject, and he was sort of talking me out of thinking that way.
Yeah.
And then he's gone and killed himself.
Oof.
And it's sort of like, and so when I found out, it was actually the first day of my HSC, my high school certificate in year 12. And so I've rocked up to school, you know, all nervous about doing these final exams.
Yeah.
And had a big bunch of friends from different schools as well, because I played football and sport and, you know, around the place. So it wasn't just friends from my old school. It was friends from a couple of different schools were there looking for me to tell me, because I hadn't known, you know, before the days of mobile phones and things like that. So, yeah, it sort of really hit me pretty hard, and, yeah, a bit numb for a while, but I sort of promised myself that, you know, it's something that I wouldn't do ever again. Yeah, I wouldn't think it, you know, if the thoughts got in my head, I'd just push them out and just promise myself not to go down that line. And that's something that's stuck with me all my life.
Years,
not to give up, I suppose. Things can get better.
So that mindset came from witnessing your friend go through that.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
So sort of just, you know, instead of thinking about life as just something you can just throw away, it was, you know, made me think about, you know, there are people out there that, you know, love you and, you know, worry about you and care about you. And if you go, you know, it really impacts people. So I just thought, I don't want to put that pain onto anyone else, you know, by doing something like that. So, you know, that was probably the lowest point. And then it was just a matter of, let's just get out of here, you know, sort of, work through life. You know, things will get better if you stick at it. So
you truly believe that?
Yeah. And it's also, look, you know, don't get into a rut. You know, that's a lot of the time it's if you're in a rut and you feel like things are stagnant and what's the point? You know, this is a bit boring and what's the use of going on, you know? And I suppose that's probably why I've sort of, you know, moved on to jobs over time, because, you know, I don't like being in a rut. You know, I don't like being stagnant. You know, I like to learn things. You know, I have a bit of a thing where it's like, you know, you should learn something new every day.
Yeah.
And that's what I sort of keeps,
you know, keeps you going.
Keeps me going.
So what would you say to individuals that say you've got to work at one particular thing for a long period of time in order to build something? If not, you're just hopping through different things and you have nothing to show for. You have gotten a legacy after that.
Yeah, well, I suppose the one thing that you probably do need to work on, you know, and for a long time, is yourself.
Mm.
You know, everything else is peripheral, and it's, you know, it comes and goes. So, like, if you're looking at careers or relationships, or, you know, like, of course, you work at all those sort of things if you want to be happy and successful, of course.
Yeah.
But it was never something that, like, careers was, like, I was never a long-term career person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've worked in jobs where I've really loved the work and I've been there quite a few years and things like that. Yeah, but we just never had that aim of being in the one job for my whole life, I suppose.
How do you feel about the job system and the way life has been designed around work and career?
Yeah, well, I do like how, you know, organisations and workplaces are looking at work-life balance a lot more. And I've certainly, you know, in my life started to look at that when I'm, you know, making choices about where I work and what I do. And it's like where I am now at the Palmerston Library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of friends and family who are just shocked that I'm a librarian. You know, that's the last. That's
like they expected more.
Well,
from
it's
you?
The last thing they probably thought that I'd be doing. You know, so, Yeah, but actually my mum was a librarian. So it was sort of like she was quite chuffed at when I was following in her sort of footsteps sort of thing. But, yeah, it was – but it's more about, you know, when I look at work, it's more about, you know, what am I getting out of it? You know, what am I contributing? You know, it's certainly it's got to have purpose is a big thing.
The work has got to have purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, you just don't do a job for money. Because, like, when I first left school, well, my first full-time job, I suppose, was in the National Australia Bank. And I did that for 6.5 years. So it was something that, you know, my father sort of really pushed me into, you know, a little bit.
It wasn't
my choice, no.
Yeah,
well,
right.
Well, when I actually finished school, I actually went to the Victorian Police straight out of school.
Yeah.
And this is at the start of 1989. There was a lot of intakes. They'd shortened the training program. There'd been some issues down in, you know, with police officers being killed down in Victoria, and they wanted to boost numbers and things like that. And you know, my dad thought, oh, that'd be something for me. I was fit, and you know, sort of somewhat had good head on my shoulders, I suppose. You know, wasn't too silly. And so I was accepted into it. But it was very soon afterwards, you know, after, you know, probably a month or so of being there, that I realised I didn't want to be a policeman. You know, I don't think that was a life for me. And so, you know, after a while I just went, nah, don't think it's me. So then I left the police, and, you know, they said, oh, you can always come back, you know, just got to pass a physical, and because you've done all your psychs and stuff like that, you just need to pass a physical and you should be able to come straight back in if you ever choose to. But I just thought, nah, it's not for me. And then, you know, Dad had some contacts, you know, with the National Australia Bank, and they'd said about, you know, there was work up in Canberra. So, yeah, went up for an interview and on a Friday, and they said, when can you start? And Monday I started. So it was very quick turnaround. And before I knew it, I was in Canberra working in the bank. But I was on my own. I was initially stayed with one of my brothers and his wife for a short time, and then, yeah, I was out on my own at, you know, 19, out in the big bad world.
Looking back at that period of time, are you grateful for that opportunity to work in the Australian National Bank?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, taught me about economics and banking system and, you know, customer service, things like that, working with people. Yeah, and I was good with numbers, of course. But I think it was like initially when I was in Canberra for, you know, I was there for a couple of years, it was because I was, you know, making my own money on my own, and I was just sort of, you know, doing what young people do, going out and partying and stuff like that. And then, yeah, when I was about 21, my dad got sick, you know, and they only gave him 6 months to live.
Wow.
So I asked about transferring back from Canberra with the bank back to Albury, so I could help Mum look after him. And so I got the transfer, and then, you know, that's when my dad, you know, made me promise not to quit the bank, because he wanted me to have a career and, you know, to be successful in life, I guess. So I promised that, you know, I wouldn't, you know, quit until he'd gone, but he, you know, instead of 6 months, he lived another 4 years, so, which I'm very grateful for, that he lived longer.
Now you couldn't quit for 4 years.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm a little bit old. I'm old school a little bit as well when it comes to those sort of things, and, you know, a promise is a promise. You know, I don't make, you know, any promises I can't keep. Well, try, you know, I try to the best I can, but it's one of the things that I've been, you know, was brought up on, and so that was, yeah, I suppose one of the things. And I sort of feel good about that I could keep a promise. That was very important that I could, you know, especially to my dad, you know, at that time. And, so that's when, after he died, it was like, well, I'm out of here. You know, and it took about 3-4 months before I did quit. But I was sort of in my mind, I was already leaving. And that's when I met my first wife and, you know, started working in the coffee shop, and then got married and would had it together. And
you've got on the rating, on the fulfillment rating, you've got your vocational and career as an 8.
Yep.
How can you justify an 8 if you? What's the longest job you've ever had? Was that was the bank one?
The bank was 6.5 years, so that's probably the longest I've been in one place.
And you definitely weren't fulfilled when you were there. That's for sure.
Not at that stage.
Correct.
Not at that stage. But when I went back to Albury, I was on the relieving staff, so I was actually travelling around all mm-hmm. the branches around southern New South Wales. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was going out to a new town, a new city.
Oh, still exploring.
I'd be here for a couple of weeks, there for a couple of weeks, there for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, whatever. And so I got to explore different places, meet new people,
which is
what I was really about. I wanted to travel. I wanted to see the world. Yeah. I wanted to meet people. So the work itself wasn't that
fulfilling.
But certainly what I was doing while I was working was, why I stayed with it well. And I liked it and things like that. The only thing I got out, about the bank was when it came to money, I don't have much respect for it. Yeah, if it's in my pocket, I'll spend it.
Really?
I'm not a very good saver. But I saw what money did to people, like how that chasing money can impact people, and it breaks relationships, and you can get in trouble, and financial troubles. That's one thing. I never wanted to be stressing over money. So it's like money comes, money goes.
Yep. So it sounds to me that you've decided to live a very simple life where money is not a focus.
Yeah, it's not what drives me.
Yeah. Mm. And so do you believe you can have a successful career that doesn't involve a lot of money?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I've worked in a number of jobs where, it wasn't about the money, and I've taken backward steps, what other people would see as a backward step to take up a job, but it was more about what I was doing and where I was going. And things like that. So, I've worked jobs where I've earned really good money, like really, really good money.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I was happy.
Well, the dream many people have is that if I can just get a job where I can get enough money that could cover for a lifetime worth of expenses, and then I could truly find freedom. So, I feel like a bit of why people pursue money is because they're looking for that freedom. Is that a thing?
I can see where you're coming with that. Yeah, there's that old line about, if you find a job you love, you never work a day in your life.
Mm.
And it's like, well, it's pretty true. Like I've had some, a few great jobs where it's like, you don't think about your next day off or your weekends because you're just happy waking up and going, doing that job, because whatever you're doing.
Why didn't you stay if you had that?
I suppose the first one is when I was with my first wife and, we were managing the Aboriginal Rehab Centre. It was remote.
Yeah.
And working with Indigenous people in, a remote setting. But I'd learnt so much. Every day we were going out hunting, fishing, collecting stuff to make artefacts. I learnt how to do all these Aboriginal skills. I learned how to track, hunt, make weapons, make, artifacts, paint.
That's pretty much doing life.
I know. And it's like, and just these people's lives that the stories they were telling me and just that relationship stuff was wonderful. And it's like every day was just a joy and we're in some beautiful part of the world. I was driving around all the time, going to these beautiful different spots all the time. And, it was one of the favourite jobs. But, that's when my wife got pregnant and we moved back down south. So I sort of regret, in that sense of leaving that job.
Yeah.
But it was probably, it was a time and a season, I suppose. And it's like through life, you have seasons.
Correct.
And it's like you got to move through seasons and, I don't sort of look backwards too often.
Mm-hmm.
It's like driving a car. You've got a rear view mirror to glance back every now and then, but if you keep looking in the rear view vision mirror all the time
and looking
behind you, you're going to crash into something that's coming at you. So I try to sort of, don't sort of look back too much.
No regret.
No regret sort of thing. So,
You mentioned early on about going back to the church now that you're back in the church and you also had your ex-wife, he's something that came to mind in terms of religion. Mm-hmm. So in the Christian faith, divorce is a no-no, right? From what I've learned and studied in terms of the Christian faith, how do you feel about that? Because you kind of had to part ways with your first wife.
Yeah, well, at that time, because when I first become, you know, leaving the Catholic Church and then becoming a Christian around when I was about 18, I was a Christian for a couple of years, and then the church I was going to, seemed to treat me like an outsider as well, and sort of because I was, I don't know what the case was. I just felt like not sort of included so much when I tried to sort of join in and be part of the church community.
Yeah.
I still felt a little bit on the outside. And then when I moved, you know, with the bank and stuff up to Canberra, I sort of stopped going to church and stopped the whole Christianity thing for a couple of years. I sort of got back into it, you know, when I was in my early 20s, when I had moved back to Albury to look after my dad, I got back into Christianity then as well. And it's sort of like to help me get through that time, I guess. It was, you know, support. Stay with the church for a couple more years. And then, yeah, when I met my first wife, I sort of stopped going to church again because she wasn't a Christian. And so I sort of forego the church thing for this relationship.
Yeah. Mm. Do you regret that?
No, not really. It sort of just was who I was at that time. It wasn't until I had moved back to Darwin in 2007, and I was sort of like in a weird place at that time because I'd just broken up, had been in a relationship with someone, I'd been working overseas, and I came back to Australia and, I wasn't happy when I first came back because we were in Broome for about 6 months and I just didn't like the place too much.
So you're saying when you got your first wife, you forgot the church. So in the relationship,
stopped going to church. Yeah.
Well, the reason why I use the word forgot the church is, did you went back to that same church afterwards?
No, it was a different one.
Yeah, so you forgot that church.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you've got an on and off relationship with the church and not with the God of the church.
Yeah, and because I didn't really, you know, it was, like I said, about having a relationship with God because I always knew God's there, you know. Yep. And so whenever I sort of needed to pray or talk to God, you know, I knew he was there. But that process of going to a service, you know, going to Mass itself, I stopped doing that.
Yeah. But you still had a belief within your heart.
Still had a belief, you know, in God. But it wasn't until, when I came back up to Darwin, like I said, in 2007, sort of still moving around, you know, like with spirituality, I guess. But in 2008, that all changed. Yeah, sort of had met someone and I had a calling, not because she was going to church so much, but just on me to actually start going back. And I was living out at Wadi at the moment, at the time, but I was driving in, you know, on weekends, 4 hours to come into town,
just for
go to church, and then drive 4 hours back out to Wadi, you know. And, but that was, for me, it was sort of like just felt like God said, you need to be here in this church, you know. And then from that, a relationship developed with this, you know, lady who became my current wife.
Was she in the church as well? She goes to church as well?
Yeah. She's Christian. She's been raised Christian all her life. Yeah. So she's very strong, which I suppose at the time I needed as well. I needed that sort of support and guidance to find my way around still going to church and also that relationship with God.
You've got a tattoo on your arm, but it's a Bible verse, correct?
Yep, that's right.
What's the verse and what does it say?
It's Micah 6:8, and it just says, see that justice is done, let mercy be your first concern, and humbly obey your God.
Why that verse?
Well, it's something to remind me about what I'm about. I suppose, you know, at the start of, you know, the show, when you asked, who am I, you know, I'm really big on equality, like justice and fairness.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've, yeah, it's, but being merciful at the same time, you know, you can sort of dish out justice, but you've got to consider the situation and mercy and, yeah, and obey your God while you're doing it. So, yeah, I just feel like a calling to, you know, keep that course in life, and it's just been a thing to remind me whenever I've maybe starting to go off track or doubt what I'm doing, that this is something that
this
is me.
Yeah.
And you know, especially when you're sort of up against, you know, inequality, you know, you can, if you're going to fight for someone or something, and I've found that, but it's a case of, you know, sticking with it and not backing down and stay in the course.
Let me just play the devil's advocate here for a bit. Yep. Your belief in God, do you truly believe God exists?
Yeah, I do.
How? Why?
He's always been there. Like from a very young age, I've just had a feeling that there is something bigger. It just can't be coincidence when things happen. You know, I know that, you know, when terrible things happen, everyone wants to blame God and sort of go, how can God make that happen? But it's part of a plan. You know, there's good things come out of everything, you know, for one reason or another. We mightn't see it at the time, but, you know, as we reflect on things, we can see that God had his hand on it.
Then the next question I would ask is a question that many, many ask online and all over the place would be, if God was so good, why allow evil?
It's a balance. And, you know, God has given us free will. So it's not like he's dictating what we do in life, because then we'd just be little robots, you know, doing the same thing, everything's being good. No, it's, I just feel that there's, everything's offset, you know, and sometimes there's evil because, you know, people purposely do something. Sometimes bad things happen by accident, you know, and it's like natural causes, or it's just something that is, unfortunately, it's just something that happens.
Do you believe in miracles?
Yeah.
Then?
Yeah, I've
you've experienced miracles?
I've experienced friends of, you know, who've had things happen that you wouldn't believe would happen. There's a friend who had a heart condition, and then when they investigated, you know, they had a heart issue.
Yeah.
But when they sort of did some investigation, I suppose, they actually found that where there was a blockage in the artery on the heart, the body had actually grew another vessel around that blockage so they could still get blood through.
Wow.
And it's like the doctors were apparently like, this is one in a billion, not just one in a million, this is one in a billion thing where the body can actually do that. And it's just like, well, that's just a miracle. You know, like she's meant to be here for some reason. You know, if, you know, if she wasn't meant to be here, she'd be not with us anymore. So there's a reason for it.
And if that miracle did not happen, then what the assumption would be, she's not meant to be here?
Well, it's just like, you know, people have heart attacks, you know, for whatever reason, you know, and hers was a, you know, genetic, you know, condition. It wasn't something from poor health or, you know, abusing a body or anything like that, doing, you know, stuff wrong to the body. It's just something that was how she was born, with a defect in the heart.
Yeah.
That caused, you know, whatever the issue was and caused the blockage. But, yeah, it was just that, yeah. And that's how I just see it. You know, miracles are things that, for me, it's something that, you know, you've don't believe would happen, and they happen. And it's like, well, how can that be?
How can that be?
How can that be?
I know these are tough questions, but I'm just trying to understand your perception in terms of God. Where would you say God is in terms of your journey to coming out of cigarette? Because you've been battling this journey and fighting this battle by yourself for a long time. Where is God?
Yeah, well, I've certainly asked him about that.
What did he say?
It was certainly something that, you know, I've been trying to do it in my own strength, I guess, when it comes to giving up. You know, feel like I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. And I suppose through life I've been doing that a lot of times where I've had to do it myself. I haven't had anyone else there to help me do something, mm-hmm. you know. So I've just learned to be able to, you know, do it for myself. When it comes to praying, like, I'm not someone that'll go out and, you know, push my beliefs on anyone. You know, I don't go and try to convert anybody. I don't really try to get anyone coming to church or anything like that. It's like, that's their journey. Yeah. And God will speak to them. That's what I feel. You know, God will speak to them when the time's right and say, you know, this is the time to come to church, and you can take that offer or not. But for me, it's I've never, like, tried to impose my beliefs
on
anyone else. There's only been one person that I've actually, I suppose, in a way, actively tried to get, you know, to know God, I suppose, because he was a devout atheist. And he was a bit of a wild man, and, you know, he was known for partying and going out.
What was his belief?
He was just believed there was nothing, nothing. So he was, you know, he believed in, like, his father, you know, he'd tell me, wasn't religious as well. Yeah, he didn't grow up in a religious family. But now he's going to church.
And it's you helped him.
By inviting him along.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
right.
then he took that journey himself, because he's left Darwin. But he's taken that journey himself. And we only spoke just the other week, and he said that, you're not going to believe it, but I'm still at church and doing stuff for God. And this is like 3 or 4 years now. And,
wow.
Yeah.
Has that changed his life by any shape?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's, you know, he was on a path of, you know, he's a bit older than me, and he probably wasn't very healthy through his lifestyle and things like that. And that's probably turned around and probably given him a few more years, I guess, you know. So, but I think it's also, you know, if God speaks to you, you know, you can either choose to listen or you can choose to ignore it. And I suppose it comes down to, you know, it's not like an audible, you know, God's telling you something.
How does he speak to you?
Well, it's just more about an awareness, a knowledge of something. It's just like that comes on where it's like, yeah, the right thing to do or, yeah.
Is that like a hindsight? Not so much hindsight.
It's, you know, if you ask the question, you've got to be prepared to, you know, you've got to then listen. If you ask a question and you want an answer, well, you got to listen for it. And so, you know, when, you know, as a Christian, you know when God speaks to you or communicates with you.
Mm-hmm. Because what?
Well, the flock knows the shepherd, I suppose, is the saying. You know, you know when it's coming from God, because if it was coming from anywhere else, it's either your own thoughts or, you know, it's that negativity and, you know, something that's pushing against you that doesn't want you to go down that path, because, yeah, sometimes it's like things will get in your way from reaching happiness. And it's being able to see what they are and avoid them and just discard it from your life. Yeah, sometimes that might be things, it might be people.
If all that you said, it wasn't an awareness, right, an awareness that's taking place, what, within you, right? If everything is coming from within you, then is it not you that's making the calls, or is this external force that you're talking about that's this bigger force?
Yeah.
Is that force not you?
No, it's more about, well, it's not like you hear an audible voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about in your head. It's like, yeah, a thought will come to you, like something's been said to you.
Yes.
You know, so.
And you can feel the difference.
And then you go, and you know it's like, because you hadn't been thinking that way, it's, you know, but it's so clear, and the clarity around it, like when it comes from God, there's clarity. And it's like, and you have a sense of contentment that you go, when you listen, it's like, yeah, that's from God. Then you go, you're at peace with it. And sometimes it can be hard stuff. It's like, you need to do this.
Yeah.
You know, you need to do that. You know, and sometimes you go, but I don't want to do that. But then it's like, but if it's coming from God, then it's like, okay, there's a reason why. And then once you go down, you know, follow through with that, what comes after that then explains everything. You know, why you felt that way, and then you know it's definitely from God. Yeah, that's all.
Well, I actually love the way you put it in. So the knowing doesn't take place into the end.
Yeah, and that awareness. And when you look, you know, reflect on things, you know when God has had his hand on something.
So really the journey is a journey of what they call faith.
Yeah.
So someone might be watching this and be like, I don't know how to differentiate voices in my head or words or awareness or things that I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So what would you say to them? Would you just tell them to just take a leap of faith?
Well, it's more about, you know, you know when it's coming from God, when it's not something that's like, you know, it's like if you're hearing voices that telling you to do something nasty or evil or bad or whatever the case may be, however you want to term it, you know it's not from God. God doesn't work that way, does he? You know, he's not.
How do you know how he works?
Oh, just from reading the Bible. And
but there's parts of the Bible that are quite and nasty, like,
oh, definitely
wiping now a whole generation, a whole world from scratch, like the story of Noah.
Yeah, oh, look, and the Old Testament is full of stories like that. But that's the old covenant as well. And, you know, when Jesus was on the earth, you know, there was a new covenant where it was about he gave us a new commandment. Mm-hmm. He didn't say to disregard the Ten Commandments and all that sort of stuff, but he was saying, love your neighbour. And I suppose that was one thing that's through my, you know, spiritual journey has stuck with me, is to love others as he loved us.
And so it's that verse means a lot to you?
Yeah, that does. Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things that, you know, as a Christian, you believe that, you know, this is, you know, coming from the Son of God.
Yeah.
You know, saying this is a new commandment. You know, we know how big we are on the Ten Commandments, you know. And so this is a new one. And it's like, yeah, and I took that to heart. It's like, you know, it used to be eye for an eye, and now it's turned the other cheek. So it's like, this is how things used to be done. This is how things need to be done now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the word is the same, the message is the same, why is there so much division? If everybody's saying, we're reading the same Bible, reading the same word, the message is very clear.
Yeah.
Why is the division? Even in the Christian religion, the division is like, how many different Christian faiths is there?
So
churches?
And there's so many. And it's one of those things that I don't put down any religion, really, because it does come back to that faith and believing in something bigger than us.
Yeah.
You know, creator spirit, supreme spirit, supreme being, whatever you want to call it, you know, put a title to it. But, it's just one of those things that when it comes to the Bible, I suppose it's the word's clear, but it can be interpreted different ways. So, you know, I've gone back and read a Bible verse. It depends on where you're at that time. I've read Bible verses where it said it meant one thing to me, and then at different times I've read the same verse and it meant something else. Even though the words are the same, it's how I interpret it. And that's how, you know, a lot of the differences are coming up about, is how man is, or woman and people, you know, interpreting that word. And if people have a ulterior motive, they can twist words to suit themselves or their situation. And that's something where, you know, if I'm reading the Bible or a particular verse or something, you know, I want to have clarity. And that's, you know.
So if it's all about that relationship with this divine being, then would you say the whole universe has that relationship already? Is there a need to be in the Christian faith to have that relationship?
Well, I feel religion's a man-made thing. Yeah, it's a construct. And it's how we've interpreted it. So when it really comes down to it, for me personally, you know, that journey through spirituality, this is the path I've aligned with the Christian faith. You know, I can understand, you know, where other religions are coming from as well, and a lot of the values and beliefs are the same. are to be good to your neighbour, are to do good deeds, are to be, you know, respectful and humble to God and things like that. So it's just a label that's been put on something. So that's why I was sort of like, you know, when I've stepped back from a church in the past, it's because it was more about the construct, you know, the physical elements of it.
Yeah.
Not so much, not the spiritual elements. It was, it was the physical stuff that made me step back from it. Where as I've got older and maturer in my own spirituality, it's, I could be anywhere. And it's like the, you know, my relationship with God's my relationship with God. And it's like, if you want to label it Christianity, it's Christianity. But it's like, you could label it nearly anything. And it's like, well, it's between me and him.
And it doesn't really matter about the outer parties.
Yeah. And that's why I don't try to spruik my beliefs onto anyone else. Because it's like, that's your journey. You know, it's for my journey, it's like a path I've taken and I'm comfortable with.
I love that. I love that. I think we're coming to the end of this podcast. I think we've still got so much stuff to talk about. The hour's already catch us, so we definitely got to do a part two. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was a crazy hour. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.